This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Kannesan, and you're now listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, today on the show, we're going to take a look at the stimulus package and how to apply for certain parts of it if you're entitled, different ways to look at the market and investing right now, as well as important lessons we have to learn from the crisis that we're going through right now and moving forward. And to help me with that, I'm speaking to Idham Idris, licensed financial planner and director at Wealth Vantage Advisory. Idham, thank you for joining me on the show today. How are you doing?
Good, all things considering.
Yes, thank you for taking the time now. Let's start with, what are your observations in terms of Malaysians' concerns on the ground right now?
Well, right now, what we're seeing is, in terms of cash flow and debt management, this is where it's very, very concerning. Malaysia household debt is very high. A lot of people, they are running some on a cash flow deficit, in fact, every month. So with this disruption in terms of how they're earning their income, it might have a potential negative ramifications moving forward.
Yes, and I think this is where the stimulus package that the government has announced is supposed to help ease some of that burden a little bit, whether it's the loan moratoriums or even withdrawal from EPF or a lower EPF contribution. And one of the things is also the financial aid that the government is giving out directly depending on your household income. Now, although we may be aware of what we're entitled to, how do we apply for that financial aid? More directly, it's going through Inland Revenue Board, but what if you don't have a tax number?
Well, the most important thing is for those that have already receiving the BSCH, Bantuan Sara Hidup, they are automatically enrolled for the Bantuan Prihatin Nasional. Yeah? So this is the two off payments that will be received in April and May, depending on which income group that you're in. So for those that at a certain income level, they already have a tax number, so they will be receiving that also. Yeah. So in fact, in terms of the Bantuan Prihatin, the financial aid that you're going to be receiving, this is pretty much automatically. You'll be receiving an email, and I think a lot of people are already receiving their payments, which was the first payment was on 6th of April. So with regards to this, the only thing that you might need to be doing if you're not having a tax ID or are not enrolled in the Bantuan Sara Hidup is to apply. Yeah, is to apply at bpn.hasil.gov.my, which is the Bantuan Prihatin National website where you can check whether you're eligible or not. The other things with regards to the stimulus package, you have five major, I would say, ways for you to manage, help you manage your cash flow. We're looking at the automatic loan moratoriums. Now, this is automatic already, so there's no need to apply. In fact, you actually have to opt out instead of opt in. There's the insurance premiums or the takaful contribution holiday, which is, depending on your eligibility, you can apply for. There's the EPF withdrawal from account 2, which is the iLestari, which is the 500 ringgit withdrawal every month for the next 12 months, which you also need to apply for at EPF website. You can actually do the PRS withdrawal from account B without the tax penalty. Now, if you know that if you have a PRS account, if you want to withdraw, you incur 8% tax penalty. However, during this this MCO period, they are waiving that tax penalty, so you can withdraw 1,500 ringgit. However, at this point in time, there's still a little bit of confusion on whether it's 1,500 ringgit per provider or just from your PRS account. So there needs to be more clarification on that. And of course, the TNB discount that can really help you to have some positive cash flow into your bank.
So, Idham, also the EPF reduction in contribution, that was automatically going to 7% as well, right?
Yes, and you actually need to apply to not be included in that list where if you wanted to continue to receive the 11% instead of the 7% reduction.
So a lot of these efforts essentially is one is to help you increase cash inflow, and the other one, the other side, is to reduce your cash outflow as shown by the loan moratorium or the utilities discounts. Now, these are not sustainable in the longer term. So as a licensed financial planner, how are you advising some of your clients who may be a bit worried about future cash flow to manage the situation?
Yeah. So there's a few important lessons that we need to learn, which is the most important thing is to manage our lifestyle spending moving forward. We found out that during this MCO period, we can actually freeze our lifestyle spending. You know, there's no more regular coffee trips a day. You're not eating out as much. Most probably, you're spending more time cooking. You're buying fresh ingredients and more affordable, maybe cheaper, in fact. So ironically, what this current MCO is doing is actually showing people that they can survive on less, you know, and not more. And there's no need to consume so much. Just manage it well or freeze the lifestyle that you're in right now. And definitely you can get your cash flow under control.
What habits would you like? So it's obviously very clear that you want people to learn how to basically spend less, right? That's an important element. And it's something that's been discussed in the general personal finance or financial literacy environment, that there's a lot of cash outflow, the debt burdens are very high. And a lot of this is shown by credit card expenditure, where people are unable to pay off their debts and continue to pay minimal amounts there.
Yeah.
How would you want people to behave financially going forward? Let's say someone's going to be able to keep their job and they maintain maybe between a 4,000 to 5,000 ringgit a month salary, and now their expenses are maybe cut down to 30-40%. Would you encourage them to keep living this way? Or, I mean, I know it's quite of a straightforward yes answer, but sometimes it's a bit hard to maintain that behavior, isn't it?
Yeah, correct. So the good thing is this MCO is enforcing behavior changes. you know that people say that you need to change. It takes about 21 days to change your habits. But in any case, I think when you look at a person's household debt, you know, and then you look at how much you're making for your car payments, how much you're making for your mortgage payments, it's usually around 40 to maybe 50%. With the loan moratorium, automatically this money is made available to you, you know. So then you can look at other areas that you may need to pay down the debt, like your credit card loans. You know? So actually it allows you, this 6 months moratorium, to actually perhaps reset your debt situation, you know, pay down your credit card where the interest is very high as compared to the loans that the mortgage loan and the car loan, where the interest is a bit lower than that. So this actually helps you to reset, basically. So when you come out of this moratorium period, come out the MCO period, you might be in a better financial situation. And then the most important thing is to not go back there. You know, don't incur any financial mistakes. Don't make the wrong decision. During this time, learn as much as you can in terms of cutting down and paring down and spending less and not going out and cooking in. You know, these are lessons that a lot of people are currently learning right now. In fact, I saw a meme where they shared where before the moratorium, the only thing that a person knows how to do is boil water. But after the MCO, they turned into Gordon Ramsay.
Yes, that was quite a funny one. So Itham, so what? Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you said earlier with regards to the loan moratorium was essentially don't opt out of it and use that cash flow to pay off more expensive debts like credit card payments. But isn't there? So even if you take up the loan moratorium or continue with the loan moratorium for 6 months, you're still paying interest on that, right? How do you think about the cost-benefit analysis there in terms of using that cash flow to pay off more expensive debt like credit cards? I think credit cards average maybe 18% per annum. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we're looking at five groups. Essentially, these are people that have cash flow deficit. Definitely, they need to take up the loan moratorium. Those that immediately lose their income, for example, or they're getting salary cuts. Then number two is those with high credit card debts, because no matter how you do it, credit card debts interest is going to really eat into your savings. So this is why even in some cases where we would actually tell people that rather than save the money, you know, pay off the debt, because saving money earns you 5-6% return per annum. Your credit card is incurring you 18% in interest every year. So, you know, it's a no-brainer there. So the third group is the source of income disrupted due to MCO. You know, these are the daily income earners maybe. Number four is for those who are concerned that the loss of income after the pandemic is over. So they might be concerned that they might not even have a job after the MCO period, or even after this whole pandemic period is over. So taking the loan moratorium will actually allow them to save that money into an emergency savings, for example. So let's say even if they don't have debt, but they don't have any savings at all. So when I mentioned just now to you, we had about, let's say you have about 50% of your 50% of your income every month is towards debt paid repayments, your house, your car loan. Now you don't have to pay it anymore. You can actually save that money, you know, and earn a small savings interest on that. But at the same time, treat it as an emergency saving. So because most of the time when you look at car loans and when you look at mortgage, the interest rate is very, very low. Yeah? The interest rate is very low. So this will allow you to have that sort of safety net building up during this MCO period, not even counting all the other benefits or that you'll be receiving, you know, financial aid, the withdrawal from account to the 4% reduction in EPF money. You know, take the opportunity to build up this emergency savings fund.
All right, Ilham, we're going to go into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be taking a look at some of the most important lessons to learn from this crisis, as well as ways to look at our investments and portfolios in and amongst this uncertain time. Stay tuned. This is BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm speaking today, on today's episode, I'm speaking to Ilham Idris, licensed financial planner and director with Wealth Vantage Advisory. Now, Ilham, we talked a bit about the stimulus earlier and ways to manage cash flow and debt management. Now, let's take a look at some of the most important lessons that you think we need to learn from this crisis. I think one of the things that's really been highlighted here is the importance of having an emergency buffer fund in terms of cash for maybe 3 to 6 months of expenses. What other things do you think are essential to learn right now?
Yeah, well, this emergency savings is a must. You know, most people would say 3 to 6 months is absolutely critical during this period of time. And this is what emergency savings fund are being made for. You know, sometimes we joke during better times where we say, oh no, you know, the emergency savings, don't take it out to go for holiday or things like that. So in this period of where it's unprecedented, you know, things that happen, but that's what emergencies are. You know, things that are accidental that you never expect happening. This is where you're required to have that 3 to 6 months expenses moving forward. So like I mentioned previously, this might be also the time to build up that emergency savings due to the fact that you will have that moratorium period. You know, this is why, in fact, in the financial planning community, we look at the automatic loan moratorium as a game changer for a lot of Malaysians out there, not just the ones who are affected, but those who are still earning salary. You know, this is a good opportunity for them to reset their finances. We also have to, like I mentioned just now, manage our lifestyle spending moving forward. You know, think about going minimal, think about cooking more, think about less consumption. For salary earners, the MCO has actually allowed people to save money, because by not going out, you're not spending a lot of money out there, you know, going out for lunch, treating people, going to the movies. You know, there is a balance that you need to strike. Yeah. You at this point in time also, moving forward, we need to look at how we manage our debts as well. Yeah. So the issue now when people talk about debts is they always look at between the haves and the haves not, you know. People who supposedly are earning more, they can manage this debt situation fine. Yeah, actually it's not true. There's a Malay proverb where it says besar periuk besar kerak, you know. What it means is that the bigger the pot, the more rice sticks to the bottom. Mm. So it just means that the more you earn, the more you will spend. So at the end of the day, the percentages actually works out to be the same between the haves and the haves not in terms of their spending, in terms of the debts they're holding and things like that. So moving forward, managing debt is very, very important. So is it important to have, for example, so many cars? Is it important to have so many property? The other thing is, are you planning for the rest of your what we call life priorities? Yeah, your retirement planning, your children education planning, your general savings. These are parts that you need to set aside money, and not necessarily the money is going out for spending only, you know. So, I think the most important thing right now is to continually support our local businesses and SMEs. You know, I think some of them are struggling at this point in time, and we need to get them back on their feet as much as possible.
So, Hiram, I think a few things you've highlighted here is, one, the importance of not scaling your expenses as you increase your salary. I think that's a common issue that most of us face, where we yes. earn a bit more and we decide, oh, we can spend a bit more. And
right.
essentially, and then leading up to issues with debt problems, where even if we're earning, say, an example of 10 or 12,000 ringgit a month, our debt levels are still 50% of our income, whether it's credit card payments or otherwise. And the right. other one was the cash buffer. Now, I want to just clarify here. Now, the cash buffer should be a complete separate pot of money, correct? It shouldn't be the active account that we use on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's right. So when you're looking at savings in general, I always joke around with whenever I do like financial wellness programs at companies and things like that. You know, a lot of people, when I ask them, are you saving? Most of them say, yeah, I'm saving. So I'll ask the next question, which is, why are you saving? So they will say, for my future or for my... So I get the idea in the mind that there is a different parts for different type of savings and different life priorities. So you must have a pot for retirement. You must have a pot for children education. You must have a pot for general savings. You must have a pot for emergencies. So this money, it shouldn't be lumped all together into one pot where you say, this is where my savings is. This is where the emergency saving is. You know, everything is taken out of one pot. You know, you are really, really... So that's the part where when people receive their income, they always think that, oh, okay, I'll be saving like 10% of my income. You know, generally people say you must save 10% or you must save 20% of your income and things like that. But the more important thing is, why are you saving? What is the savings for? Then you can understand that, hey, actually, I cannot be saving 10%. I must be saving more, because there's so many parts that I need to fill, actually. So when you start, when you receive your salary increase every year, the thought should be, where can I save this money instead of what can I spend it on?
Right. So instead of your expenditures going up at a certain percentage, it's scaling up with your salary, let your savings scale up with your salary and keep your expenses at the same level, essentially.
Now, exactly.
Now, Hiram, let's talk about... So we talk about savings. That's one element of it. But in terms of retirement and all of that, it's important to invest that money. It's important to have an investment plan. Now, however, a lot of people are a bit concerned, because a lot of us, whether we invest in the market or whatever, a lot of our portfolios are in the red right now. How should we be looking at investing at this current juncture?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of people are already bored of hearing this advice. It's just investing is a long-term, is a long-term play. Yeah. If you're investing, you should not time the market. You know, there's still that behavior out there. And I see it a lot online as well. You know, I frequently go on financial planning forums or Facebook groups and things like that where, a lot of people is just what I see, what I understand is, it's just financial literacy and financial education. Mm-hmm. So these are just what are the things that are lacking. And it's good that they're going into the internet and trying to find the right kind of information. But sometimes they receive the wrong advice. So this is the scary part, you know. So there are opportunities now. Yeah, there are. Of course, you know, people would say, oh, now market is very low. It's a good opportunity to come in. However, please don't discount the fundamentals, which is, the first thing first, before you start investing, please have that 6 months emergency savings, like I mentioned just now. You must, number two, you must focus on the investment objective. Why are you investing? What is the pot for? And then understand the risk profile of the investment instrument, whether you're investing unit trust or shares or robo-advisory or even, you know, some people are looking into gold and cryptocurrency at this point in time. The time horizon for the investment, you know, these are just basic fundamentals. All these questions need to be answered before you go into any type of investment. And then once you want to go in, then you need to understand in terms of the asset allocation, how much the percentage should be in this investment instrument. What's the percentage? And so on and so forth, you know. It's more important than timing, you know, because you want to grow it over the long term. If you're trading, buying in and out, you will lose that opportunity when the market turns and you're late to the game already. It's already moving up, you know. So that's where I see it. Lah.
So on that note, Idham, what do you think about strategies like dollar cost averaging or value averaging? These are things that we've talked about on the show before.
Right. So I would always go back, like I mentioned, focus on the investment objective. If you're investing over the long term, then of course dollar cost averaging is a prudent strategy. It's just a logical strategy. It's a disciplined, systematic, but boring strategy. And people sometimes don't want to hear, oh, dollar cost averaging, are you serious? Yeah, but it is, you know, and it actually, fundamentally, it makes sense. You're just averaging down your units, especially, so I'm talking specifically on unit trust investment. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at share market, it's a totally different situation because then you have to look at the health of the company. You have to look at whether the company will be able to come out of the COVID-19 period stronger, things like that. Unit trust helps you to diversify those kinds of risks, you know. So I like where you're able to manage your risk further by diversification.
So things like ETFs as well, correct?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So that helps. That helps in terms of diversifying. But over the long term, saving should be consistent. Saving should be regular, and you shouldn't actually like meddle with it too much, you know, as long as you get the asset allocation in place, as long as you know that, okay, I have this, for example, I have this unit trust investment. Let's say I have about 300 ringgit going every month into a retirement plan. So you have like 100 ringgit going to unit trust investment, maybe 100 ringgit going to robo advisory, and maybe 100 ringgit going into shares or maybe a fixed income. So just stay the course. Just focus on the long term because you know retirement is a 15 to 20 to 25 year old game. Yeah, you're going that length of time. You know, so whatever that is happening now is just a blip over a 25 years period. This is where people need to understand that panic selling is a very real thing, and people shouldn't. And the main reason why people is panic selling is because they didn't do the right allocation and they didn't have the right investment objective in place before.
So yeah, Idham. So essentially, with something like dollar cost averaging or any stock where you do your consistent savings, it's essentially diversifying in a different way, right, over the timeline, and
correct,
keeping in mind that whether it's a specific goal or retirement, these are all long-term goals, and you have time on your side in this sense. And Ilham, before we end, earlier you were bringing up how you're reading a lot online. Some resources are not as good as the others. Do you have any sources where listeners can go and get reliable information online?
Yeah, so like, you know, people say, like, don't Google your symptoms.
Yes.
You know, and then you found out, oh, I might have this, I might have that, you know, and it turns out it's just a headache or like that. So it's actually is very important to get the right information at this point in time. Coincidentally, while all this is happening, the Financial Planning Association of Malaysia is currently running their campaign this year, which is called the Financial Literacy Year. So they are actually taking a note from the government's launch of last year's National Financial Literacy Strategy. So what they're doing is they have a Facebook group on Facebook where they're doing Facebook Live sessions almost every day now, so that you are able to ask questions or learn more from actual licensed financial planners. So this will actually help you to gauge where you are, what should I do with my financial and things like that. So the FPAM-FLY Facebook group, I think, is a very good resource now for people to find. For WealthVantage Advisory, we are doing regular FB Live sessions as well on real-life financial planning. So which means that we actually look at real cases with real problems and also real and practical solutions. So people can actually compare, this looks like my current situation. What can I do to solve some of my problems? And of course, for our firm as well, we're doing online financial wellness program with a lot of companies where they're talking about cash flow management and debt management, especially during this MCO period. A lot of companies right now are actually reaching out to licensed financial planners to come up and do these Zoom classes or Zoom seminars, trainings for their staff to understand more on how they can go through this uncertain period. And of course, just reach out to a licensed financial planner, not someone who's going to sell you a product or ask you to buy something, but making sure that they're focusing on your advice. You know, get a financial health check done. Get someone to look at your cash flow, your asset, your liabilities, what's your net worth, and see whether there's what financial goals that you want to hit over the next 5, 10, 15 years period, and then structure your financial towards that. You know, so this is the time, like I said, a lot of Malaysians can actually really look into their personal finance and reset. Reset. Start fresh. You know, come back stronger after this MCO period and this pandemic period.
All right, thank you so much for joining me on the line today.
Thank you, Roshan.
I was speaking to Ilham Idris, licensed financial planner and director at WealthVantage Advisory. And this was Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.